All right.
Right, so turning to other approvals required. Other approvals will be required to enable the construction and operation of the hub, including of a bit of relevance and discussion in the context of this application, regional resource consents. KiwiRail has not sought those regional consents concurrently with the NOR, and there's no requirement under the Act to do so, as opposed to, for example, the panel be familiar with the Section 91 test when you think about resource consents, not the same provision in relation to NORs. And again, in my submission, that harkens back to the ultimate sort of policy purpose of an NOR. The reality is that some of the matters, and I think this is one of those areas, I'm going to not use the word tension, it's far too dramatic, I think, but one of those areas of push-pull, I think, is between the KiwiRail experts and some of the council experts, is again in relation to how much information does the district council need to think about effects. And in my submission, some of the matters that the district council seeks further information on are in fact regional matters and matters for the regional council.
City council.
For the regional council when it comes to the regional consent.
Yeah, you say district council.
Pardon me.
City council.
City council, yeah. Thank you, sir. KiwiRail will also be, in terms of additional approvals, seeking an alteration to the existing NIMT designation to enable the realignment of the NIMT to the west of its current alignment. As outlined in Mr. Skelton's evidence, the existing NIMT corridor is currently located in the area that's proposed through this application to be used to develop the bunds and barriers required to manage the noise effects from the proposed freight hub development, as well as for proposed planting. The realignment of that NIMT line, existing line to the west, will have a range of benefits, including from a noise perspective, it will shift that operative NIMT further into the hub site and away from the existing dwellings along Sangsters Road. But for present purposes, in my submission, the panel's consideration of this application should remain focused on the effects of allowing this requirement. Then we get into, over the next few pages of our legal submissions, the Section 171 legal test. And the section is set out there. The section is clear that the panel must consider the NOR and submissions received, and as I noted earlier this morning, a total of 98 submissions have been received, many of which were in support or neutral or grant with conditions, and many submissions in opposition. More neutral. And the expert team for KiwiRail has carefully considered those matters and addressed them in evidence and will be able to speak to you about those matters. So when considering the NOR and submissions received, the panel must, subject to Part 2, consider effects on the environment of allowing the requirement, having particular regard to that suite of four things at 5.3, relevant planning obligations, adequate consideration to alternatives, reasonably necessary, and any other matter the panel considers is necessary to make a recommendation. Now, the case law is clear. I won't read that in any detail around what have particular regard to means. It does not mean give effect to, but is a stronger meaning, as you would expect, than simply to have regard to. And each relevant matter must be considered separately by you. The strength of an individual matter and the weight to be given to it will depend on the evidence you hear and the importance of that matter in respect of the particular case. So turning first to that first sort of limb effects on the environment. The High Court has characterized this, unsurprisingly, as the focal point of your consideration and assessment under 171 effects on the environment. So the central focus there is provision of that provision is around effects. That assessment of effects through case law, as the panel will be aware, has led to a layered analysis, starting with an assessment of the existing environment, consideration of plausible future environment, discretion around permitted baseline, and then finally assessment of the remaining effects. Turning first to the receiving environment in relation to this proposal. Now that assessment is a factual one, an assessment of the current environment both on and beyond the subject site at the time of the application of the NOR. It includes the reasonably foreseeable future environment as it might be modified by rights to carry out permitted activities under the district plan and implementation of consents which have been granted and are likely to be implemented. The environment, as the panel will know, does not include the effects of consents that have not yet been obtained. Ms. Bell, in her evidence, details that existing environment assessment. But by way of summary in my submission, that evidence is that across the suite of expert briefs, the site itself is relatively open, largely undeveloped, characteristic of existing rural land use, with a majority of indigenous vegetation replaced by pasture and other exotic species. There are two stream systems within the site, which KiwiRail's experts consider have low ecological and natural character values. Approximately two-thirds of the site is zoned rural, and the remainder is zoned Northeast Industrial Zone. And of course, as we just mentioned a minute ago, the existing NIMT designation runs through the site. In terms of the permitted baseline, the panel has a discretion in relation to that, and the panel will be well aware of that permitted baseline tool. Ms. Bell considers that there are some adverse effects of this proposal which can be disregarded through an application of the permitted baseline, and that in particular relates to effects and activities which are permitted in the industrial zone in the district plan. The council reporting planners do not consider that the permitted baseline should be applied in this context because of the scale of the hub activities proposed. In my submission, it is open to you and appropriate for you to apply the permitted baseline insofar as there are effects which are permitted under the district plan and are comparable to activities authorized in the NOR. But in the event that the panel does not choose to apply the permitted baseline, in my submission, that does not have a material impact on your assessment of the effects of this NOR. And Ms. Bell, in her evidence, has confirmed that even if the permitted baseline is not applied here, the effects of the hub can be appropriately managed. So then you must also consider, in working through that layered approach, the remaining effects of the NOR and any measures proposed to avoid, remedy, or mitigate effects. And those mitigation measures proposed by KiwiRail have been detailed in the expert evidence and set out in the conditions. As the panel will know, in terms of managing effects, the RMA is not a no-effects statute. As the High Court has said, effects will always be unavoidable for large-scale linear projects, and the Act does not purport to be a no-effects statute. Each adverse effect does not have to be avoided, remedied, or mitigated to the extent there is no effect remaining after mitigation. And it is for the panel, you, to consider the effects of the NOR and reach a conclusion based on the evidence whether those effects are sufficiently avoided, remedied, or mitigated in the context of the project as a whole. KiwiRail has comprehensively assessed the effects of the notice of requirement. Ms. Bell has undertaken an assessment against the relevant planning documents, and those are set out in 5.21. I won't read that. And she has concluded that the freight hub, with proposed conditions, is consistent with the relevant policy statements and plans. The council reporting planners agree that generally the project is consistent with the relevant planning provisions that focus on enabling infrastructure, including the infrastructure objectives and policies in the one plan and the district plan. However, council planners consider that the project is inconsistent with some of the relevant provisions and recommend additional controls to seek better alignment. Now, notwithstanding KiraRail's evidence and our submissions that the NOR is consistent with the relevant planning documents, a number of additional matters have been incorporated into the proposed conditions out of the 42A report. So KiraRail and its experts have thought very carefully about many of those additional matters. And the set of conditions attached to Ms. Bell's primary evidence seeks to incorporate many of those. In my submission, it is unlikely that a project of this scale will ever be consistent with every provision in a relevant planning document. And even if you were to find that there was a degree of inconsistency with relevant planning instruments, that is not determinative. The Environment Court has said it is not unusual for there to be a lack of direct policy support for an NOR. The planning instruments are not determinative of an NOR, even though they are documents to which we are to have particular regard. And my submission, the NOR is consistent with the relevant planning instruments, but in any case, should the panel find to the contrary, that is only one of a number of matters the panel must consider. Turning then to 1711B, assessment of alternatives. And as the panel will know, a relevant factor in the 171 test is whether adequate consideration has been given to alternative sites, routes, methods of undertaking work. The Environment Court has held that adequate is a perfectly simple word, and we have no doubt that it has been deliberately used in this context. It does not mean meticulous, it does not mean exhaustive, it means sufficient or satisfactory. Focus of your inquiry into whether adequate consideration has been given to alternatives is on the process undertaken by the requiring authority, not the outcome. The Environment Court has said, when determining whether alternatives have been adequately considered, the question before the court is narrow. In essence, the question is whether the decision was reached arbitrarily. The court is limited to the process the authority undertook, rather than whether or not all alternatives were considered and whether the outcome was the best option. The High Court has considered, and of course it's the Basin Bridge jurisprudence, which went into significant detail for the Board of Inquiry and High Court on this alternatives assessment aspect of the test. Adequate consideration of alternatives will depend on the circumstances of the application, and in particular the level of adverse effects and the extent of private land affected by the designation. The test may require a more careful consideration of alternatives where there are more significant adverse effects of allowing the requirement. KiraRail has carried out an assessment of alternatives process, which in my submission clearly satisfies the 1711B test. The alternative process was comprehensively documented in the MCA report, summarizing the evidence of Ms. Polson and Ms. Bell. And that involved three stages: site selection, site layout, and spatial extent. KiraRail investigated a range of potential sites. The existing NIMT rail corridor was appropriately and necessarily the focus for the identification of areas. 9 potential site options were identified, and independent technical experts from a range of disciplines assessed each of those site options with a long and short list of options against a list of criteria. Workshops were held and the decision conferencing technique was applied to test the assessments and ensure that scores and ratings were tested before they were applied. Once the preferred site had been identified from a technical perspective, four alternative layouts for the site were considered from an operational perspective, and again by technical experts to consider the environmental effects of each of the layouts. And that process was used to inform the preferred layout of key components of the hub. With the preferred layout for the main operational components selected, consideration was given to alternative methods of undertaking the work, which included consideration of potential roading connections to service the hub, location for stormwater management and methods, and noise mitigation measures like funds and noise barriers. Now, the case law is clear that there is no requirement for QRail to consider all options, which is in response to some submitters' concerns as to why other particular locations were not considered. Council reporting planners agree that QRail has undertaken adequate consideration of sites, but have questioned why various alternative methods were not considered for the NOR, including, for example, extending designation boundaries to designate more land to include properties expected to be significantly affected by noise. Ms. Bell's evidence is that extending the designation boundary to include those properties would not represent an efficient management of resources, nor would be considered reasonably necessary in relation to the Act. That is because other methods, such as substantial noise mitigation, which can be included within the designation boundaries, are appropriate to manage the effects of the freight hub.
One of the things that I will be interested in, and I don't expect you to address that today, is whether someone who doesn't have their land taken but suffers what is called in public compensation terms injurious affection has the right to seek compensation under the Public Works Act, because that may be one factor in the overall consideration of those two things. It may not be the only thing, but it may be something, and I don't know the answer to that question.
We turn then to the 1711C element of that test for NORs, whether the work and designation are reasonably necessary for achieving the requiring authority's objectives. That's an objective test. So the focus of the inquiry and of your inquiry here is not on the requiring authority's objectives, as you know, because of course it is for the requiring authority to set those objectives. Case law has been clear that it's not for a court or a panel to stand in the shoes of, for example, an airport authority or a roading agency, but rather whether the work and designation are necessary to achieve those objectives. Again, the Environment Court helpfully clarifying for us the very simple language of the Act, reasonably necessary falls somewhere between desirable and essential. The High Court has held that the inbuilt flexibility of this definition enables the court to apply a threshold assessment that is proportionate to the circumstances of the case. Helpful, again, but this is the test we all do in relation to the context of the case before you. Now, 5.38, I've set out KiwiRail's objectives for the delivery of the freight hub in or near Palmerston North on the NIMT, to increase operational capacity to efficiently accommodate projected regional and national freight growth and support wider regional development, enable rail to be integrated with and connect to other transport modes and networks, and improve the resilience of the regional and national freight transport system over time. In my submission, the work and designation are reasonably necessary to achieve these objectives. And that consideration has been canvassed in detail in the AAE and in Ms. Bell's evidence. I summarized there at 5.39 why in my submission the work is reasonably necessary to achieve KiwiRail's objectives. In my submission, the use of the designation is also reasonably necessary for achieving the objectives of KiwiRail, as it enables the land to be safeguarded from potential incompatible development, which may prevent or hinder the works from being developed. The council reporting planners consider that KiwiRail's objectives could be, quote, better achieved through refinement and improvement to better integrate the freight hub with other infrastructure and economic activities. The council reporting planners consider that while the freight hub will enable rail to be connected with other transport modes, it may not always achieve this in an efficient way. With respect, we disagree with that. It is entirely in KiwiRail's interest to ensure an efficient and well-integrated network, and KiwiRail is committed to working with other infrastructure providers to ensure this. And that's reflected in the road network integration plan reference in the proposed conditions. I'd also note there, though, from a legal perspective, 1711C does not require that the freight hub be the, quote, best way of achieving KiwiRail's objectives. In any case, the council reporting planners do conclude that the freight hub is reasonably necessary to achieve KiwiRail's objectives. And then finally, in relation to 1711D, you must also have particular regard to any other relevant matter that you consider reasonably necessary to make a recommendation. Now, 5.44, I set out there a number of strategic documents that may be considered in making a decision on or a recommendation on the NOR. Those are set out there. Ms. Bell has undertaken an assessment of those documents in her evidence and considers that the freight hub will be a key component to achieving the goals of an efficient transport network that integrates and supports the economic development of the city and the wider region. The council reporting planners agree that those documents are relevant and necessary to have regard to under 1711D. However, they consider that there is some uncertainty as to the alignment with some strategic transport documents. I'll talk about those in a minute. Ms. Bell has also addressed that in her evidence. And finally, in relation to that 171 legal test, consideration of effects is subject to part two. Fun part of the legal submissions. The High Court, of course, confirmed that in the context of assessing NORs, the matters in part two must be considered. That was very clear in Basin Bridge. KiwiRail's evidence is that the NOR is consistent with the sustainable management purposes. In part two, of course, there is the Davidson and other line of cases, which panel will be very, I'm sure you'll be very familiar with. And so there's sort of that catch-all that for the avoidance of doubt, even if we don't have to think about part two, we have thought about part two. And Ms. Bell's evidence is that this NOR is consistent with part two matters.
Just one question that Ms. Bell might want to reflect on. Given your comment, which I agree with from the Environment Court, that a designation, particularly of this scale, is unanticipated by the planning instruments, to what extent are we moving towards greater emphasis on Part 2 for guidance because the planning instruments are not likely to be well constructed for the issue at hand, is something to reflect on.
Thank you, sir. I agree entirely. I think there's some useful and helpful discourse in the Davidson and King Salmon cases, but I think it has, in some matters, sort of in an unintended way meant that some applicants or potentially some local authorities have had less regard to Part 2 than in fact Parliament probably intended in my respectful submission, and I endorse that observation, sir, that a Part 2 assessment is important in many cases, but certainly in relation to a project of the scale which very clearly the City Council wouldn't have anticipated from its planning documents. So over the next couple pages, I do summarize the assessment under Part 2 matters. So Section 6, in terms of the freight hub, I submit that the relevant matters include that the freight hub has the potential to enhance the natural character of the Mangoni Stream and its environs, that there's currently no public access to the streams or tributaries within the proposed hub site, and public access to waterways will be enhanced through the provision of recreational tracks around, for example, the stormwater ponds. In relation to 6 sub E, throughout this process and going forward through the development of detailed design, Kiwi Rail has and will continue to work with iwi to ensure that cultural values are understood, recognized, and provided for. In relation to 6F, there are no registered historic heritage features within the site, but any potential effects will be managed through Heritage Museum's processes and through the Act there. In relation to potential hazards, those have been comprehensively considered by Kiwi Rail's experts, and risks in their evidence and opinion will be able to be managed through detailed engineering design.
Well, in a sense, it's the absence of particular elements of the protective character of Section 6 being in existence subject to the Section 6G matters, which we still have to hear from Mana Penua. You're saying it's the lack of protection required by those provisions that indicates something significant about the proposal. Is that what you're saying?
Sorry, sir, can you read?
Well,
the
absence of very strong resources having the characteristics that Section 6 is aimed at may be a factor that's of significance in terms of our Part 2 evaluation.
Yes, sir. That is a submission. In relation to matters set out in Section 7, again, as I've said before and you'll hear later this afternoon, Kiwi Rail is continuing to engage with Mana Whenua to identify cultural values and address any potential effects of the project on those values. And Kiwi Rail has, in condition, proposed a Mana Whenua engagement framework to enable and ensure those values will be recognized and provided for through detailed design. And Ms. Paulson will address you on that in particular, on the approach QRL has sought in relation to the conditions. In relation to 7B, the freight hub in its proposed location is consistent in my submission with Council's strategic plan for the area, and will enable the transfer of more goods by rail than currently occurring. The removal of freight traffic from the roading network will also provide for greater efficiency and use of that physical resource in a more sustainable manner. In relation to amenity values, those are expected to change, but that change will be avoided, remedied, or mitigated, minimized where possible by the proposed mitigation measures, which we'll hear significant evidence on. The proposed planting, stormwater management, watercourse and culvert design will respect and enhance intrinsic values of the ecosystems. In relation to sub G, there are no finite characteristics of the natural and physical resources identified. And finally, in relation to flood effects, those will be modeled and considered during detailed design stage. And overall, in our submission, the project is consistent with those Section 7 matters. And finally, in relation to Section 8, the proposed conditions seek to provide a framework through which monofamily values will be recognized and provided for, and QURL has and will continue to look for ways to formalize those relationships and ensure there's a positive partnership going forward. So, sir, now I might ask for my learned friend, Ms. Rapley, to take you through the subs in relation to assessment of effects.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Arthur Young, and good morning to the commissioners. As the panel will be aware, QURL's team has comprehensively assessed the effects of the proposal, and that's set out in the AEE and the expert evidence, and comprehensively summarised in Ms. Bell's evidence. But what we propose to do in the following section is just highlight the key aspects of that assessment of effects, and the panel will hear from each of the expert team this week about those in further detail. So firstly, in relation to economic effects, Mr. Paling and Mr. Colgrave's evidence is that the construction and operation of the freight hub will provide a range of economic benefits. These include both during construction and once operational, the freight hub will generate employment opportunities for the community. Mr. Colgrave estimates that at the construction phase, this could boost North Island GDP by nearly $100 million per annum, and that's assessed over a 10-year period. The benefits of introducing additional container capacity and the use of longer trains will conservatively amount to approximately $1.3 billion. There will be direct benefits to the movement of goods, and that costs will reduce, which will assist in encouraging modal shift from road to rail, as well as reduce congestion on the road network. The freight hub will also enable the existing freight yard to be released for alternative uses, which will have wider economic benefits for Palmerston North City. While the freight hub will generally support other activities within the vicinity of the freight hub, there is the potential for some adverse economic effects as a result of changes in access and traffic flow. However, these effects can be mitigated through design, which in Ms. Bell's view would make the effects on a small number of businesses negligible. And in respect of the access to the foodstuffs distribution centre, which the panel will have seen on its site visit, which is clearly across from the freight hub, Mr. Georgian has provided a concept design in his rebuttal evidence, which was filed last week, which shows how access can be safely accommodated in this location. Mr. Colgrave's evidence is that increases in employment will increase demand on the housing market. However, the Section 42A report confirms that the council considers there is sufficient land available to enable more housing. So in our submission, the panel can be comfortable that these effects can be appropriately managed. KiwiRail's evidence demonstrates that there will be significant economic benefits. And while there is the potential for some adverse economic effects, the effects are overall positive. There are some minor technical differences of opinion between QRL and the council's economic experts. However, overall, the council reporting planners agree that there will be significant economic benefits from the freight hub. And this has also been acknowledged by several submitters. The primary outstanding issue relates to the council's desire for a dedicated freight corridor to be established between the freight hub and the adjoining Northeast Industrial Zone. KiwiRail's evidence is that there is neither an economic nor a transport basis for such a corridor, and in our submission, KiwiRail's evidence should be preferred. Turning to archaeological effects, as Ms. Arthur Young just noted, there are no registered historic places, recorded archaeological sites, or listed heritage sites in the relevant district plans within the site. Despite this, Mr. Parker's evidence is that there is potential for adverse effects on archaeological sites within the site. That Mr. Parker has identified, and for a small number of additional sites to be uncovered during construction. Mr. Parker considers that the adverse effects on archaeological sites can be managed through the Heritage New Zealand Pūhere Tonga Act 2014. Accidental discovery protocols have also been recommended and are included in the proposed conditions. And we understand from the council's latest set of conditions that was circulated on Friday that those conditions are now agreed between the parties. Turning to geotechnical effects, Mr. Mott explains that a preliminary geotechnical assessment has been undertaken for the site based on a desktop analysis. Mr. Mott considers that while there are some potential geotechnical risks for the site, these can be appropriately managed through engineering solutions at the detailed design phase. The council reporting planners considered, based on the information currently provided, that they cannot form a conclusion on whether geotechnical risk can be avoided, remedied, or mitigated, but consider that it appears the risk can be managed through detailed design. Mr. Mott's evidence is quite clearly that it can be managed through detailed design, and in our submission, the panel should rely on that evidence. This is a common in our submission and well understood approach for a notice of requirement and project of this scale. In terms of stormwater and flooding effects, Mr. Leahy's evidence is that once operational, the freight hub has the potential to result in a number of positive effects from a stormwater perspective. These include reduced upstream flooding, reduction in sediment loads, and the delivery of a comprehensive stormwater management system, which will provide better outcomes. There is, of course, the potential for adverse effects from construction. However, Mr. Leahy considers that there are a range of methods to manage the effects, such as erosion and sediment control practices, which are, and appropriately in our submission, addressed at the regional consenting phase. Although there is the potential for adverse effects once the freight hub is operational, Mr. Leahy confirms that these can be managed through the provision of an appropriate stormwater management system. An appropriate land has been included within the site for this purpose. While again, there are some minor technical areas of disagreement, overall, the council's experts and reporting planners agree with this conclusion. Ms. Bell also states that the volume and quality of discharges from the freight hub will be addressed through the regional consenting phase, and that the proposed conditions have incorporated those aspects of stormwater management that the council is responsible for managing at a district level. There are again some differences of opinion with the council reporting planners as to how stormwater management is provided for in the proposed conditions. In our submission, the conditions proposed by Ms. Bell are appropriate in the context of an NOR and are sufficient to manage the stormwater and flooding effects of the freight hub at a district level. In terms of transport effects, there will be positive effects as a result of the freight hub due to the level crossing closures, as well as opportunities for improved public transport facilities and walking and cycling network within the vicinity of the freight hub. Although it is anticipated that there may be adverse effects as a result of the construction of the freight hub, the ability to assess these effects is limited, as the details of where that fill will be transported from and the routes that will be followed has not yet been confirmed. A construction traffic management plan has been included in the proposed conditions, and is, in our submission, appropriate to manage these effects. The council reporting planners have also recommended a condition requiring QRL to undertake pre-condition surveys and repair local roads as a result of damage caused by heavy vehicles associated with construction of the freight hub. While there is the potential for heavy vehicle movements to cause damage to the road, the traffic associated with the freight hub will only represent a portion of the traffic on the surrounding road network. It will be difficult in our submission to attribute damage to the roads to vehicle movements associated with a particular activity. A condition of this nature could result in QRL addressing effects which are unconnected to its activity. And as the panel may be aware from the North Shore Bulk case, there are a range of other tools that available to the council to also address these matters as part of its broader road controlling authority powers. Mr. Georgeson's evidence is that while there is potential adverse traffic effects associated with the volume of traffic that will be generated by the freight hub, these adverse effects, in his view, once the freight hub is operational, will be minor with the transport upgrades that are proposed to be provided. Mr. Georgeson also considers the effects on travel time will be minor and there will be no adverse effects on safety or parking. In addition to the infrastructure upgrades, the suite of measures that are proposed to manage potential transport effects of the freight hub will ensure that there is an appropriately integrated transport network provided. These measures have been proposed by way of conditions and include an operational traffic management plan, a level crossing safety impact assessment, and a road network integration plan. After careful consideration, the transport conditions have been substantially amended in response to the Section 42A report. In our submission, the mitigation measures proposed by KRL are appropriate to address the transport effects. In terms of social impacts on the community, Ms. Austin has comprehensively assessed the potential social impacts of the freight hub in terms of the local impact area and the wider impact area. She considers that there will be positive effects in terms of improved road safety and also employment opportunities. Ms. Austin's evidence is that during construction and operation, there will be a range of adverse social impacts, many of which arise from changes to noise, amenity levels, and the transport environment in relation to the freight hub. In this regard, she acknowledges that the mitigation recommended by KRL's technical experts is also important for mitigating social effects. In addition to this, a suite of additional measures have also been proposed to mitigate the social impacts, which include the establishment of a community liaison forum, a community liaison person, and the implementation of a construction engagement plan. These conditions again have been amended and in our submission strengthened in response to the Section 42A report. In our submission, a project of this scale and nature will inevitably be a change for the community, and KRL acknowledges that. This is reflected in the conservative and comprehensive assessment that Ms. Austin has undertaken. The mitigation measures proposed by KRL are appropriate in our submission to manage the social impacts and provide opportunities for the community to be involved in the project going forward. Turning to ecology effects, the adverse effects on ecological values will primarily occur at the construction phase as a result of vegetation clearance and loss of streams. Mr. Garrett Walker's evidence is that overall the freight hub will have a very low level of adverse effects on ecological values on the site, and that any adverse effects can be appropriately managed. Ms. Quinn, the council's ecologist, also accepts that the site is degraded, and she does not consider that it is fundamentally inappropriate for the freight hub development. To date, based on numerous site visits that have been undertaken, no natural inland wetlands have been identified within the site, and Mr. Garrett Walker considers it is unlikely there will be any potential for wetlands to be identified on the site that would contain ecological values that would require avoidance. And the panel will be aware this is a hot topic at the moment.
Yeah. It would be nice if all ecologists were that confident.
Certainly, sir. There are a range of measures available to manage effects on ecological values. However, Ms. Bell's evidence is that none of these measures are required as conditions on the designation, as they will be required as part of the future regional consent process. This is entirely appropriate in our submission. In some cases, Mr. Garrett Walker considers the freight hub provides an opportunity to improve the condition of ecological features within the site. He considers that if culverts are installed in accordance with relevant guidelines, the freight hub could improve fish passage. The council reporting planners consider that a more comprehensive assessment of the environment and effects on ecological values is required. And Ms. Arthur Young will address you shortly on the management of ecological effects in the context of the National Policy Statement on Freshwater. In terms of contaminated land, a preliminary site investigation has been undertaken, which didn't identify any hail sites within the designation extent. Mr. Havelt acknowledges there is the potential for contamination to be present due to past farming practices. He recommends further investigations by way of detailed site investigation, and depending on the outcomes of that, a contaminated site management plan. This has been proposed in the conditions, which are supported by the council reporting planners. Once operational, activities will take place on the site and have the potential to give rise to adverse effects, but Mr. Havelt considers that with best practice operating procedures, these can be effectively managed. Turning to effects of dust and other emissions to air, at the construction phase, there is the potential for dust to be generated from earthworks and the movement of heavy machinery around the site. KRL